Hello and welcome to the Voice Magazine podcast. I'm Elle, Voice's media sub-editor and also your podcast host. Happy International Women's Day. For the entire month of March, we'll be talking to different women from the Voice team to discuss their views and thoughts surrounding what is also Women's History Month. Our first guest is Demone, discussing her take on women in the media.
Hi, yeah, my name is Demone. I am a Kickstart journalist at Voice Mag, which is what this podcast is on. And I am a 22-year-old, soon to be 23, black female who loves all things faith, music, yeah, anything creative. I love to speak about it and get involved.
No, we love that here. That's especially what Voice is about. What's been on your mind?
So this week I'm writing about women in media, talking about kind of the lack of representation with women of all kind of ethnicities, because most industries are male dominant. And I think that although we do see women dotted about and we see women like excelling, it's evidently when you go into these rooms, you're usually the only one. And I think from my experience of, you know, kind of not seeing people that look like me or just seeing women in general, you're made to feel as if it's unattainable. And I think through the people that I've spoken to or I will be speaking to, they're all kind of just explaining how they felt and how they've had to overcome imposter syndrome, how they've had to kind of like do so much more to kind of prove themselves as women, and just how when you do get another woman come into that workplace, it can either be let's support or it is a there's only room for one. And I think that that's not only just in media, but that's in all creative industries and just in life, which is so sad. So yeah, that's what I've been speaking about.
Yeah, I can completely relate to only being enough room for one woman as well, particularly in the creative industries. I'm sure there's many others out there who've also had similar experiences. What would you say your experiences have been like in the media and not feeling that you find much representation?
Originally, so I did a journalism degree, very, very long story, up in Leeds. So all the Northerners, if you're listening, I was the only black person on my course, which was already kind of daunting. I kind of expected that. I did like a lot of research into like before I came into uni, because you always get told it's a melting pot and, you know, you're going to find like loads of different people. But the moment I walked in, I was the only one that looked like me, spoke like me. And I was like, great, I'm already going into an industry that even my course doesn't have that representation. And I was like, that's a piece of crap, basically. And then I remember on the first day, one of my lecturers, who amazing guy, this guy called Les, he worked for like BBC, like the Sunday Times, the Mail, the Sun, like all the leading tabloids, like he worked for them. And he said, he was like, everyone in this room is probably not going to make it, firstly. If you don't get a good degree out of this, you're probably not going to make it. If you are a woman, you are less likely to make it. And if you're a person of colour as well, you're also less likely to make it. And I think it was really hard to kind of hear that, especially like one of your first lectures ever. But as my course kind of went on, I realised how true it was. And it was really, really sad. So I felt as if I had to work so, so hard just to kind of do well. And I didn't even have that reassurance that even if I did make it into the industry and I did become a journalist, that I would have that support from black women or women in general. So it's always been me having to write about the black stories because there was no one else there to give another opinion. There's always been that feeling of just a lot of pressure to kind of represent as women as well. Like you feel as if you can't be very timid. You have to kind of put on this front and this stand that, like, I can be an alpha male too. And I'm not overly feminine, but I love the fact that I am a woman and I can be all that I want to be. Like, I shouldn't have to be boxed. And that's very much been the experience for me. It's just, no matter how hard you try, there's always some box that you kind of have to kind of adhere to.
Wow. I mean, hearing that on your first day must have been so hard. Do you think hearing that at the beginning of your course, would you say that that would be demotivating to hear, or did you take it as a challenge?
I think a bit of both. I think at first I was like, how dare you? I remember just being like, how dare you kind of just spit that out and think that's acceptable and think that, you know, I have to take it. So it did kind of motivate me to be like, okay, if I'm going to be the only one, let me be the best. But with that, when you don't get that grade that you want, or when you work so hard on a story that, you know, is supposed to be the exact box that you've been fit into and it doesn't actually go that well, you then feel like, oh crap, am I actually going to do well, or am I going to succeed? Because, like, this is what I'm supposed to be good at. This is what I'm supposed to be able to be, like, the best. I'm supposed to be the best at writing this. And I've kind of fallen short. So it was definitely a mixture, but I did always try to, if I was going to have to represent for females, or if I was going to have to represent for the minority in the room, like, I'm always going to be polite. All the kind of things that are associated or stereotyped with being female, being overly emotional, or like being black and like having bad timing, bad punctuality, I always try to kind of be a bit better. I struggle because I'm human, but I do try.
That sounds like a lot of pressure to be, you know, put yourself under. And like you said, it's an unfair amount of pressure, I think, you know, if other students don't have the same standards to hold themselves to. You mentioned previously about talking to people in the industry. You know, what have their views been so far?
So I spoke to a lovely lady called Olivia on, I came across her in Leeds working at like a local TV station. So I don't know if you've ever heard like Made Birmingham, Made Derby, Made Nottingham, those kind of stations. And yeah, like I was on my work experience for 2 weeks and she was like basically ahead of the digital fields, all the socials and everything. And I spoke to her and she really opened my eyes to like just what it felt like to be really good at your job, but to not necessarily get the recognition. And it wasn't just because of like an ethnic thing at all, just because she was female. I looked around in the room and she was the only one that was there. And she was like, sometimes it's really hard because, you know, what happens when you do get your period and you're feeling so crap about yourself and you've just got a guy there that's basically like, oh, like, I know you're ill and stuff, but can you, like, you need to make sure you do this. Like, there's sometimes such a lack of, like, consideration. But she's done so well. But she mainly spoke about her imposter syndrome because she now works at Channel 4, which is, like, an amazing achievement. And because of what she had faced in the past. So Olivia spoke about the imposter syndrome, starting her new job at Channel 4. And that was purely based off her experiences in those smaller rooms where she just kind of felt, although she was amazing at her job and she's great, that being on a bigger stage, that pressure to perform, that pressure to like, am I good enough for this as a female? Like, can I manage all those deadlines? Am I able to balance my emotionalism with my productivity and all this kind of stuff? So, she really opened my eyes to, regardless of how great you are, even when you've got all the skills and all the attributes, even when you get to the dream job, you can even get there and still feel that you're less than because you are a woman or because of something. We, as women, I feel like we put so much pressure on ourselves to kind of succeed that we pick at anything. We're our worst critics. And I think from all the women that I've spoken to, it's a common narrative that they just, what do I need to do better? Like, it's never just enough. Like, I'm not supposed to get this. I'm not supposed to do well. And it's really sad, but we all do suffer with it. So it is normal as well.
No, for sure. I know, particularly with imposter syndrome, I think it is something that's 3 to 4 times more likely to occur in women than men. I think that's such an interesting topic to bring up as well. I've seen it both with myself, I've seen it with other people at the top of their game, that they think they've only got there by luck, and it's such a hard thing for people to talk about because they think that if they tell people, people will see the imposter. it's definitely, it's such a complex thing that, especially for women, it's just not spoken about very often. I hadn't even come across the term until my last year at university.
At all. Wow. I only came across it when I was watching something and it was mentioned in a show, and I was like, wait, this is a real thing. And I was the one that told Olivia in that room. I remember saying to her, I was like, I think you're suffering from imposter syndrome. This is like maybe 2 or 3 days before she actually started her new job. And I was like, wow, like, this is a real thing.
Also, do you have any thoughts on women in media and their portrayal, even as fictional characters? I mean, I typically tend to find, especially in fictional settings, there's this strong, independent woman who's like this cookie cutter mold. You know, what's your take on that?
Yeah, it's so true. I think that it goes back to us just being categorized. And I wouldn't say that I'm like overly, I'm not very dominant. Like, I know how to like control a room, but it's not done in a thing of you have to listen to me. Like, I'm a big empath. Like, that's a big thing of mine. Like, I love people and listening to their stories and listening to their hearts. And I found that because that's kind of deemed as a weakness, you feel as if you can't share it and you don't see it as a strength. Like, there's a reason why women are here. There's a reason why we have different opinions. There's a reason why we're made differently, because we bring different things to the roles. But because we have that idea, like you said, that I have to be strong. I have to be this untouchable female, nothing, like, I can't show any forms of weakness because there's someone else right behind that's going to get this job and they're going to do it better than me if I don't keep that standard. We just lack so much diversity in a workplace. We lack so much diversity in industries because as women, we've just been conditioned to not really believe in the power that we have. And I'm not like uber feminist, but we have a lot of power. And that is in our weaknesses as well. And I think too often they kind of get shunned and pushed aside. So I definitely agree with that.
One last question I'm asking all of the women of Voice to answer. What does being a woman mean to you?
Yeah. Oh, what does being a woman mean to me? I think it means being strong. Then that's the first word that comes to mind. I think it means being a master of many hats. Like, we are so adaptable as women. It makes me feel like, me being a woman, I feel as if I genuinely, I have the tools for so much. Like, I obtain so much power as being a woman, and I wouldn't want to be a man regardless of, you know, how this world is set up. I think we have such big voices, and I love the fact that I could be sensitive today and run the show tomorrow, can cry at as many rom-coms as possible, and kick butt in judo if I wished. Like, I am so multifaceted as a woman. I think that's what it means to me. Just kind of, yeah, we're great. We're sick.
I love that answer. So positive as well. So if viewers wanted to find you on social media, where would they go?
So I'm mainly on Instagram. So it is DE_MORNAE. If that's very clear, I'm not too sure. or you can just go straight onto the Voice website and there's a page about like about our team, and you can see like all the other women that are on the team as well as me. But yeah, that's where I am mainly.
Thank you so much for coming and talking to us today, Demorne.
Thank you for having me, Al.
Next up, we have Ophelia.
Hi, I'm Ophelia Appleby. I am Business and Project Assistant at Voice. I'm also a singer and an artist.
Happy International Women's Day. What's been on your mind?
I guess something that has been playing on my mind a lot has been the kind of taboo and stigma that's attached to eating disorders and stuff like that. Obviously, this week is ED Awareness Week. So it's kind of like a good time, and it coincides well because it is often like it is largely women that tend to suffer from that and get sort of elements of shame with that, which is obviously not right. And so it's an important thing to kind of raise awareness about and talk about, I think.
I mean, I didn't even know it was Eating Disorder Awareness Week as well. So you're definitely raising awareness. How do you think it affects women in particular?
Well, I think the issue is the way that we're taught about what eating disorders are and what role they play in society is really, really distorted. Obviously, most people kind of have some concept of what they are, and at least they know two of the main ones. Most people know what anorexia and bulimia are. There are actually a few more than that. It's just that the way they're presented to us, like at school, when we kind of like first kind of learn about those kinds of things, is like, this is how crazy people behave. This is something that insecure, weak people do. This is like, effectively, it's condemned from the off as like insane behavior, when actually it's a pretty kind of common reaction to the kind of pressure that society, the media, school, everything puts on us from a very young age to look a certain way, to meet certain standards, to be confident without feeling confident. And I think in order to be able to actually tackle the problem, you have to be able to talk about it without any embarrassment, without putting blame or shame on anyone, particularly like young girls. And it does affect guys as well, but like it is largely young girls, because that's literally just going to make the problem worse. It's going to make them feel even worse about themselves and what they're struggling with. And it is an actual mental illness, so you can't, like, placing blame helps no one.
Yeah, that is so heartbreaking to see, particularly, you know, in these young girls as well. But just for anybody really, it's an incredibly high, almost impossible standard to meet.
I think it's about, like, because a lot of what International Women's Day does is, like, I think for a large part, it does so much, like, highlighting issues, like, putting spotlights on things to celebrate, but also, I think, a lot of it, also with, like, periods and stuff, is about destigmatizing stuff that we've been, like, conditioned to feel embarrassed to talk about, but it's actually just, like, part of life. And so there's no reason why people should feel embarrassed.
That's a really good articulate answer that actually I hadn't even thought of. But you are right, International Women's Day has been uncovering these stigmatised issues.
Yeah, I think it's about kind of, because it does link back to equality. Obviously, International Women's Day like started based off of equality and based off of trying to, you know, achieve equality for women, but also kind of equality for everyone. And putting so much stigma and like shame attached to things that are like part of every day of being a woman is kind of like undermining part of what your just normal natural life is. And I think like with eating disorders particularly, because it is literally the patriarchal system and society that causes people, women, to have those kinds of reactions. If women were treated with respect and accepted for how they looked and who they are, like from the off, would they really like feel the need to be so unkind to themselves? Because it is not natural to behave that way and to be so unkind to yourself. It's a reaction to the society that we live in. So it also just links back to equality, because if you treated people equally and you didn't have these horrendous, like, ridiculous expectations and beauty standards, then you'd never have a reason to not feel confident. You'd never have a reason to, you know, you'd never feel like I have to look a certain way to be accepted. I have to have like certain measurements of my body to be the thing that society expects me to be. Instead, it would just be like, what do I want to be? Who do I think I am?
Now we're seeing like all these posts on Instagram, and so much of it is to do with body image on one hand, but on the other hand, there also seems to be more awareness. What do you think?
I think to a degree that it's been a bit of both. There's definitely more awareness now, which is a good thing, because when you feel like you're alone dealing with something, it makes it even harder to speak out about it. It makes it even harder to reach out for help. However, the awareness is often or is largely because of the internet. But with that, because of the kind of the power and the omnipresence of the internet and the media and everything that it does and brings to us all the time, it also is adding to the pressure that is part of the problem. You know, like pages like Instagram and what have you, pushing ridiculous beauty standards on people that we've always had ridiculous beauty standards, but now they're incredibly visual, like on our screens every day. And you have to be even stronger to sort of reject them and say, that's subjective opinion. You know, I can define for myself what I think is beautiful and what I, who I want to be and how I want to look and what makes me feel confident. So in ways it's better and in ways it's harder. That's not a very good answer, but effectively, yes and no.
No, I think what you're describing there is that the ultimate ideal of like female empowerment as well, you know, having that confidence, just being able to kind of say no to those like negative self-image, especially at the posts. Yeah, so I think it's really interesting how things have changed over the course of even 20 years.
If a person wants to make a change to their appearance, like medically or whatever, for their own like reasons, that's something they want to do, I support that. But if it's like young girls that feel that they have to do that to be accepted or to be considered beautiful, then that is completely out of line. That is a problem. Like, no one at the age of like 13 or 14 should feel that they have to like drastically change their image or go to like a plastic surgeon just to, I don't know, be attractive. Like, it's silly that people even feel the need to like measure up to someone else's perception of them, to like measure up to someone else's opinion. If that's the reason why people do things like that, then that is absolutely part of the entire thing that International Women's Day is kind of battling against, like being oppressed by other people's opinions of you, I guess.
So with International Women's Day as well, could you tell us some more about the article that you have written?
So for International Women's Day, I wrote quite a short article talking about the potential future of International Women's Day. I've given a brief overview of some of the key points in the past, because obviously we have to understand where we started to understand where we potentially are going to end up with this. I've looked a little very quickly about what it seems to be about currently. Currently, it's obviously putting a spotlight on areas of that need improving, areas of like mistreatment and abuse and oppression, but equally like celebrating things that we have achieved, you know, like the fact that Scotland has made period products free for everyone. I think last year in Afghanistan, the president signed a law that meant mothers' names would be included on their children's birth certificates and IDs for the first time, when before it had always been just the dads. A bunch of other excellent achievements that I've put in, but we can all think of a few, like women have been doing some wonderful stuff recently. But then the bulk of the article is just kind of talking about something called anti-trans exclusionary radical feminists, TERFs, which is a really confusing branch of feminism, because you'd think feminism would be a good thing and would be people fighting for equality and people kind of trying to raise people up and empower women. But in this particular instance, they are effectively fighting to keep the term women exclusively owned by cisgender women, which is horrendously problematic. I've tried to keep the article not too opinionated. Like, obviously I have my opinions. I think that's a horrendous opinion to keep. But I've tried to present it in a way that sort of shows both sides of the argument, so like readers can make up their own minds, I guess, even though I'd rather they didn't just become like radically exclusivist feminists, because that would just not help the problem.
I think it's good that you've shone a light on this, because this is a problem that I haven't particularly heard of. I can imagine there's a lot of people, if you're not particularly in those communities, you're just not hearing about it. So it's great that you've brought attention to it as well.
Did you not hear about... Okay, this is not the same thing. This is partly why it's such a nitty-gritty, troublesome issue, because it's not an opinion that is exclusively held by radical feminists. It's an opinion that is low-key sort of crops up in the most unlikely of places. I'm sure you remember J.K. Rowling's really questionable tweets about trans people.
I haven't seen her tweets, no, but I do definitely remember the controversy surrounding her book that she released and all of the fallout from that.
And she's not she's a bit anti-trans, but she's not like a radical feminist. You wouldn't really call J.K. Rowling a feminist based off of her writing. It's definitely on the patriarchal side. Wonderful books, I am a fan, but I'm not sure you could call it feminist writing. And yet she does have these really radical sort of prejudices that apparently have just been always part of her mindset, and she's just decided to share them with us in the most like appalling display of sort of low-key anti-trans hatred, I guess. It was a real shock to me, because she's someone who I've always thought was one of the good guys, if that makes sense. I know that's really black and white thinking. You can't always be like, there's good guys and bad guys. But I always kind of held J.K. Rowling in quite high esteem. And then this all came out and it just made me think, like, how many people are low-key harboring really grim prejudices about who can or can't be defined as a woman? You know, you can't gatekeep a term just because you identify as that. It doesn't belong to any one person. It's completely absurd to... But yeah, that's, I think, one of the things that triggered that kind of research into that sort of thinking a little bit.
Okay, so following on from that, I think what is a very fitting question, what does being a woman mean to you?
This is a really difficult question. I think for me, it means being like part of a team, like a massive, massive team of people. It's really nice having something, and it sounds like a weird thing to say, but it's really nice having something in common with so many thousands and millions of people that I've never met, and having like similar struggles. Even though I don't enjoy necessarily all the challenges, like dealing with being like overly sexualized everywhere you go, dealing with like the physical pain of like biologically being a woman, stuff like that. They're not always like super fun challenges. It is really nice that it's something I have in common with every single woman, more or less. It's like, well, not every single woman. It's nice knowing that I'm not alone, I guess. It's nice knowing that being a woman means being something that a lot of people are proud to be, I guess. I think it's something that I think I'm still learning how to express it for myself and what precisely it means according to me. I feel like I definitely had very different views of what it meant for me when I was like a teenager. I thought that it meant I had these great big kind of boots to fill, like you have to be this, you have to be this, you have to be this if you want to be a woman. And I think now I see it more as like it's this sort of great, beautiful responsibility to be true to myself, so that women who come after me or like women around me see it as something to be proud of, see it as something to be celebrated, and something that you can't limit or define or prescribe or say, this is the criteria you have to meet because it's none of those things. It's a privilege and I guess a confusing journey. That's probably the best way I could put it.
Wow, that was such a poetic and articulate answer. If listeners wanted to find you online, where would they go?
So the main platform I use is Instagram, and I'm just Ophelia Appleby on that. I also have a Twitter, which is mainly nonsense. I also have a Facebook page for my classical music, which is Ophelia Appleby Mezzo Soprano, but the main one I use is Instagram, and that's where I'll be promoting the music that I'm working on.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. You can find Ophelia and De Mornay over on the Voice website. Stay tuned with our takeover for Women's History Month, with episodes released every Monday for the entirety of March. Today's episode was made possible by Voice Magazine, an online platform for young people interested in art and culture. You can read Voice over at voicemag.uk and find it on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as VoiceMagUK. The Voice contributors are also on Instagram over at voice.extra. If you are looking for another podcast to listen to, the contributors release the Voice Extra podcast every Saturday, where they talk about the pieces they've produced and the culture they've been enjoying. If you like this podcast, please consider helping us to make more with a donation of any amount at voicemag.uk/donate. Thanks to Kevin MacLeod for the use of the track Thief in the Night. You can find more of his work on incomputech.com. L. Farrell Kingsley was the sound engineer and producer. Tom Innes was the executive producer.